Thank you for listening to the Crown Refs Podcast, the audio experience for basketball officials. Serve the game.
And Mr. Ben, thank you for joining us. You're our special guest tonight.
Excited.
It's great to bring in a special guest from the community, because I don't know, maybe we unlocked a new format here, because I do feel like we have a lot of officials in our community that have great stories to share. And I was really excited when you reached out to me. I love when people just reach out and initiate from our community that want to share and get involved. So I was excited to read a lot about your bio. You have a lot of things going on, a lot of fun facts. So why don't we just start, for the officials listening, just give us a brief bio on Ben, the person and the professional, and then we'll get into your book, as you're an author and an official. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. I appreciate this community very much. For those who don't know me, I've been an official for only 2 years. I joined Crown Refs about a year ago, and I told Paul, I called him kind of out of the blue. I said, Paul, how do I join? I don't even need an interview. It's just, I'll pay the money. Because the material you have on here is really, really helped me get started off in my career. And one thing we'll talk about the book later is, I think we all, as professionals and as officials or otherwise, have a responsibility to give back to the community in any way we can, right? We're all blessed and we all have God-given gifts. And I really want to find a place where I can plug in. So when Paul did that for me for free on, all the podcast, media that we have today, it really helped me get going. So I felt indebted, and joining Crown Refs was a natural thing. Just a little bit of background by me. I grew up in the state of Maine. So I'm a New Englander, and played basketball my whole life. My parents coached me. Played high school basketball, and then went into my engineering school in college. But I never really stopped playing. I mean, I played men's leagues and always around the sport. I had three children. Two of them were avid basketball players. I coached them, parented them, mentored them all the way through. Ran a boosters club for 4 years in high school, so I was always in the gym, right, my whole life. And then I actually met a guy who's very important to me named Randy Jensen through a professional network. And Randy said, Ben, you ought to pick up a whistle. I never really considered officiating before. And literally 2 days later, I was at a Minnesota Official Association referee clinic, right? And I never called the game before. I'm doing a three-person game, summer high school ball. So I took it from there. I really, really have loved this avocation. I found, I want to talk about it tonight. And it's just a great thing to continue being involved with a sport that I love.
That's amazing. I just want to get a check in with you, how your season went. What's one thing you really improved on from year one to year two?
One thing that's really important, Paul, and I didn't know this at the beginning. I've always been sort of an achiever in my life. I want to get things done fast. I want to be the best at it. And you expect quick progression, right? And my assigner, great guy, has really stepped me up properly. And you just can't rush it, right? I mean, you do have to go through the levels of the sport to get the reps, to get the comfort, and just to see a lot of plays. So this year, I think I was really in the right frame of mind in terms of just enjoying every single game and slowing it all down. I literally had much more of an impact on the court. Last year, my first year, I was reacting. I was just trying to keep my head above water. But this year, I think I actually really took the pace of the game and could make real logistic movements on the court, put myself in the right spot, and also make the right judgment. So just slowing everything down and taking things in due time, which I think we all have to be patient in our career and take things one step at a time.
We were talking about patience the other night, and we speak about it a lot with officiating, but as you start to gain more experience and repetition, just adding more and more patience to every aspect of your game, most notably play calling and just seeing plays to and through, start, develop, finish, and decide. So I'm glad you talked about patience. It's a huge skill set with officiating. I was mentioning to my wife, I have a podcast with Ben tonight. She said, didn't you already have one with Ben? I said, yeah, this is the second Ben. So Ben number two just joined us. How you doing?
Good to meet you.
Likewise.
So it says you were the all-time leading scorer of your high school. Are you a mid-range assassin?
It was interesting. Back in the day, I was tall. I'm 6'3"-ish. And for the state of Maine, that's pretty tall. So I was the tallest player on the team, but it was also the point guard. It was kind of weird. But we went to a small school in Maine and, scored some points. And what's interesting is I'm in good contact with the current head coach, And we chat back and forth, and I follow them online, and they have a couple of kids who are going to pass me. So the record is up there now, but it's not going to last much longer, which I'm excited about.
You must be proud to see that kid Cooper Flagg come out of Maine. He's the biggest player. They said he's the best player to come out of Maine since you.
Well, nowhere near that level. Like that, he's unbelievable. Yeah, we were all, as I went to the University of Maine, we were all holding out hope he'd come back and take us to the glory land, but not to be, he's going to Duke, but Maine's one of the very few schools who hasn't made it to the Big Dance, so someday we'll get there. But great story, great family, and amazing to see Maine flourishing at that level.
And you mentioned you were, I have a cousin from Maine, by the way. Hello, Teresa. She lives in Mexico, Maine, by the way.
Good pick from
Mexico, Maine.
Yeah.
You said you were a boxer in college. What are some things you pulled from that experience in your life and took with you?
I was really fortunate to grow up in a boxing family. My father was a boxer. He trained a world champion, which was amazing. So I got to be in that environment, just around discipline. I grew up in it. So I saw folks what it takes to be a winner. My father is an amazing man. He's probably my top mentor and my best friend throughout my life. So to see him not only train boxers, but to somehow have time to coach me in basketball and be there at all my events also and not miss anything is a blessing. But I think what I took out of a sport of boxing is people think it's a brutal sport, which it is, but it's really a cerebral sport. You talk about patience. You've got to really have your eyes open. You got to wait and react to the other opponent and not rush, because if you rush, you're going to get beat. So being fit, being patient, and just thinking about the game in terms of chess, that's what you take out of it. And I learned from a great guy.
Getting to some more of your fun facts, you've been to all 50 states. Take us through that that experience. How'd you go about doing that, and how long does that take you?
So I spent 25 years with Honeywell, which was an international company. So I literally got to travel for work, which was a blessing, all over the country. And I'm also a baseball fan, Paul, which you saw. I've been to 170 professional baseball stadiums. So what I'll do is I'll literally plan trips where I'll go to a new state. I'll go to three or four minor league parks. It's a bit of a hobby of mine. There's 245 of them or so. So I've got 75 or 80 of them left. But I love baseball, and I love traveling to stadiums, and I love traveling into all states, and I've been to them all. I have two Canadian provinces left. I got a knockoff. But I've been everywhere, which is kind of cool.
We just had an official join from Toronto today. I have no idea what province that is in.
In Ontario. Yeah.
Ontario. Yes, I've heard of that. I've heard of that.
Yeah.
So, and you published a book. That's amazing. It's on Amazon. It's called Jumpstart Your Future. So let's get into the origin of, you know, how long it took you to write a book, when you put it out, and a little bit more of the takeaways from your book.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about it. You know, it was a COVID project, right? That's when I wrote it. It was during the pandemic, and I had tons of time. One thing I do in my professional life, I've run businesses for years and years, and I always find myself mentoring younger people. And that's what the book's about. It's targeted at the, you know, folks between the age of 22 and 30. Jumpstarting your future out of high school or college, when you first start your career, what are the things you need to know to be successful? In my humble opinion, folks really aren't always prepared. High schools and colleges are training them in whatever discipline they learn, but the basics in life aren't taught. So I found myself coaching people in the companies that I work with. Ben, tell me about 401ks. That's the first question. You know, why do I sign up for a 401k? How do I leverage that? And that just leads to a bunch of other conversations around how do I manage my money? How do I network? How do I get ahead professionally? How do I get that next promotion? And so after doing that for several years, a couple of people said, Ben, you really ought to write a book. Like, take all the stuff you share with your mentees and publish it. And that's what I did. So I literally took, you asked Paul how long it took. It took about 6 months. I took a bunch of yellow sticky notes with all kinds of random ideas and put them all over my son's bedroom, who had moved out on the college. And I literally just was my work center. And so every night I came home from work during the pandemic and just thought about ideas for the book, put all the little yellow sticky notes in columns and kind of organized them so I'd have chapters, and then found a publisher and was able to get it published. So about 6 months from start to finish.
So the sticky notes are basically chapters and big macro themes that you have? Like, what did it take us?
Micro themes, even like little tiny ideas. And I carried this yellow notebook around with me all over the place. I would just think of something and I'd write it down. I'd put it next to my bed at night. So if I thought of something, I could write it down. And it is kind of all these collections of lessons I've learned throughout my life and my personal and professional life that I think would be helpful for someone coming out of college or high school to know as they start their professional world. And that's what the book's about.
Sure. That sounds great. And we have a lot of officials that are teenagers, early in their 20s, of all ages. And this is information that is helpful for everybody. So Why don't you take us through, you know, pick a chapter or pick a theme, and you know, for all the officials listening, take us through some of the value in, you know, some of those chapters that could be helpful to us.
I mean, they're not only lessons I've learned, but they're kind of the way I am, right? So I really think that in terms of officiating, the first whole chapter of the book is called Start Strong. It's the first chapter. And I think no matter what you're doing in your life, whether it's a relationship or your job or starting a new class in school, you really want to get off to a strong start. The one example I give in the book is, you know, if you're in high school and you're taking a class and the first test you get an A, and the first week you're super engaged in class, you're raising your hand, the teacher is asking questions, that teacher now thinks you're smart. You may not be, but you know, you have that benefit of the doubt, right? So the whole semester, the teacher's going to treat you a little bit differently and give you that benefit of the doubt, whether, you know, if you get a C on a test, they had an off day. I'm going to help them get back up to that A level. And I think officiating, that's the same thing, not only in your career, you know, in every game. So when I walk on the court, I have this process I go through in my head. Okay, it's game time. And I just want to have that first few minutes pregame, and once the game starts, to be really, really good. Because then the crowd, the players, the coaches, you're going to get the benefit of the doubt the rest of the day. But if you come out there and you're sort of, you know, not sharp and you're not hustling, I think you're toast, right? So I really think that start strong aspect is super important across the board. The second thing I talk about in that chapter, Paul, is, you know, showing up. You know, to me, there's certain things in your life that aren't optional, even though they might say optional. You know, for example, at work, we have a volunteer event. You know, it's optional. But if you're young and you really want to get ahead in your career and be noticed at the job, you got to show up to those things. The company Christmas party, probably got to make it. And I think that, you know, everything that comes my way from the Minneapolis Officials Association, from Minnesota State High School League, if there's a clinic, if there's a meeting, if there's a Zoom call, I don't miss them. I'm on every one. I mean, A, I enjoy it for sure. And I'm getting a lot of learning out of that. But B, those are things you got to do to be plugged into the community, become, you know, known as someone who cares about their craft. And can take it to the next step. Otherwise, you're not seen, you're not thought of, and you're going to fall behind. I mean, so the whole first chapter of the book is about that, those two thoughts. You know, show up, start strong, and be present.
Yeah, when you say start strong, I think about the officiating component of it, and like the first foul of the game, right? Coming out and making sure your first foul is correct. That doesn't mean let your guard down the rest of the game, right? The first foul is just as important as any other one. It's more of a mindset kind of approach, like we want to come out and be correct. But what advice do you have when we, this could be in with an officiating or just generally speaking, when we don't come out and have a strong start, like how do we recover from that? Is it over? What are we telling ourselves to persevere and push through those?
So first I want to answer your first question, but like in basketball, you want that first call to be strong. To me, it's like be mechanically strong. And Paul, you know, your signal schools, like, I mean, I love those, right? Because it's bam. It's like you want to be right on it. You want to have the right signal. You want to, you know, have command and respect in the crowd. That's almost as important as the call itself, right? We can see it was a block or a charge or a hold, but come out to the table, be crisp, and just mentally walk yourself through that. Now, if you're having an off day and you catch yourself, you can recover, right? And I think communication with coaches specifically can earn that back pretty quick. I know a couple of times where I've had a call that I might have blown pretty early. I'm kind of giving that coach the time to give him, you know, the ear and say, you know, coach, yep, we're here today. We're here together, working hard for you. And then you can just kind of build up from there, almost kind of admitting that you were slow, right? Admitting that you started weakly. In the professional world, I tell people, you know what, raise your hand. Ask to be coached. Ask to be, you know, given special opportunities, special assignments, because the person who asks is being humble and is open to learning. And I think that's how you recover from maybe not starting the strongest.
And just to finish on it, being a first, second year official like yourself, what are some things you found yourself doing with your association or just generally speaking with you as an official to show up?
Yeah, I was, first of all, I was given a fantastic mentor. His name's Kevin Sayers. He's a New England guy too, which is kind of a small world, and we become friends. But having that person kind of help coach you through and navigate the waters was, you know, worth $1 million for me. Kevin told me where I needed to be, where the things were showing, you know, how things were happening, and having him just coach me on where to go and when to be got me started. But once you start pulling those strings and knowing where they lead, you got to kind of keep coaching yourself because no one else is going to do it for you. I talk about in the book in terms of your career, it's the same thing with officiating. You can't expect that someone else is going to do it for you. I worked for a big company for a long time, and I always thought, you know, as long as I work hard, I'm going to get that next promotion. I'm going to get that next assignment. And while they're a great HR department, they care about you, you really got to manage your own career. Like, where do I want to be? What are my goals? And you have to, you know, verbally communicate those as often as you can and show up in ways that, that give you those opportunities. I think it's just, we own our own career, whether it's your in professional life or in officiating, we own our own path.
100%. You know, it's great to have the community that we have now and mentorship being so important. I was talking to someone yesterday saying, like, there's no way you can do this by yourself. I don't know what industry you can do it by yourself, but with officiating, it's just so important to have that support system, right? So what would you say and share about just finding the right mentor or group?
I mean, first of all, I think mentors, people are always shooting for, I've heard this anyway, that you're shooting for the highest person in the organization. They want to be with the top guys, right? The top girls. To me, it's someone you mesh with, right? That you can actually trust and has your back. You know, Kevin and I are very similar guys. I'd be driving home from a game, almost every game the phone rings, right? You know, how was your game tonight? You know, what plays did you have questions about? And I ask him about his game too. So we kind of have that feel back and forth. Yeah, he's my mentor, but I kind of give him some support too. So I think if you can find somebody that you can be almost friends with, I think is super important. And now, you know, we do things outside of basketball now, right? That's how the friendship has developed. I'm super grateful for that. One thing I would say is don't be afraid to ask questions. I was gun shy even the first couple of months. You know, do I sound, you know, not educated? I mean, I read the book, but, you know, do I not know the rules or whatever? But just ask the questions. People are willing to help. All officials have been there before. And I really, once you get that groove, and not afraid to ask questions, it really goes much faster.
You know, I don't like to say the word dumb or stupid, right? But I guess with regards to questioning, like, there are no dumb or stupid questions. So if you feel like you have a question, whether you're in any setting and you're not asking it, you know, that speaks on the insecurity and caring about other people's perception of your knowledge or lack thereof, you know? And I tell everybody who joins here, ask any question you want anytime. We're all here to help and get better. And there's always somebody from another part of the country that's going to be on the other end of that message, willing to send it back to you.
Yeah, I think that our association here in Minneapolis is fantastic, right? So we have lots of meetings. We have training sessions. We have two or three meetings every year where we all get together. We have clinics all summer. So there's lots of opportunities to ask those questions, and they'll say right at the beginning of every meeting, you know, raise the hand because somebody here has the same question, right? You're not the only one. And so I have a really good community here in Minneapolis.
You mentioned humility, being humble in the show notes, something I believe so much in, and it's a real superpower of a trait with officiating. And one thing that I am leaning into, you know, I think about confidence and humility, they're really intertwined. And I'm finding the most confident people have way more humility than they do confidence.
I think they're hand in hand, right? The people who are not humble or arrogant, I think they lack a bit of confidence. I think you're right on. And this was a bit of a change for me. In basketball itself is humbling. You even if you play the game your whole life and you coach the game, putting on stripes and a whistle is a different thing, right? And so I kind of had to really quickly put myself at that place and say, you know what, I'm starting from ground zero here. There are people here who have been doing this a long time, and I just need to be humble and just take criticism and be open to it. That's the only way you get better. And the more humble you are within your, you know, the officiating community, the more people put their arms around you. So it definitely is a symbiotic thing. When it comes to coaches, you know, humility is a weird thing, Paul, right? Because if you're too humble, you don't have command. So that's really where I think you take a step change in your officiating career, at least I did in my second year, being humble, but also being confident at the same time. And, you know, yeah, coach, I hear you. Here's how I saw it. And really being rules-based in that explanation, as you've always said, Paul. Like, we can have a conversation all day long, but here's the rule. Here's what I saw, and here's what I, you know, ruled on. I think that if you're confident in that approach, most coaches go along with that.
Yeah, and there really is no too humble. That would just cross over into a different category of not handling the situation or, you know, not addressing something, right? Just to lean into as much humility as you can, I don't think could ever be a bad thing. Let's talk about respect, treating everyone with respect. You know, when we get on these mentor calls, that's one of the first things we say is just being a high character individual, being positive, being a teammate, and respecting the people that may not necessarily have as much respect for you. So what can you speak about respect?
one thing about the basketball court, whether you're a player or a coach or official, we're all coming from different socioeconomic backgrounds. We all have different, you know, we're all raised differently, come from different towns, but we're all there for one thing, and that's to either play or officiate or coach a healthy athletic contest, right? And really, I try to really respect everyone exactly the same. And the hardest thing, I've learned this through for your podcast, Paul, is, you know, forget about the game you had with that team before. It's a new game, right? It's a new night. And that really matters because if you come with a clean slate, I think you earn respect. And I think that the coaches notice that. So I think it's a really important thing to really treat everybody equally and come with a clean slate every night. One of the biggest eye-opening experiences for me was when my kids were playing because you see all the kids from different towns with different backgrounds come together and watch how the kids do it. The kids got this figured out, right? The players aren't the problem. Obviously, there's scuffles every now and then, but they know how to behave. They know how to work the game. They know how to work with each other. It's as adults that we kind of overthink it. And I think when we get on the court, we just got to shut everything else off and say, you know what, we're here to have fun. We're here to run a game and respect each other. I just try to have that mindset every game.
Tell us more about the book. What else do you want the listeners to know? Which parts stand out?
A couple of things. I talk about, in my mind, this is in terms of improvement, just how do you get better as officiating? Because you know what? This happened to me, Paul, this year. I mean, I did, I don't know, 150 games, something wow. like that.
You did 150 just within the Scholastic season or overall combined with rec?
Overall, I did about, I don't know, must have been, I don't know, 75 to 100 high school games. And wow. 50 you know, kids games, something like that. So as you go through the season, you really want to try to think about, I want to get better every single game, but you're not gonna. Like there's some nights you just have an off night and you know it, and you can feel it emotionally, physically, just didn't go your way. I talk about that in the book from a professional career standpoint. I always have this thing in my head. I use the image of anchors. Because as you go up, you know, guess to my finger, you always want to be raising, right? But you're going to go up and down and up and down. But if you plant anchors in those high spots, you always know in your head where you were. I know I'm that good. I know I did it. I know I can be back at that spot doing that, you know, that 4A game on a Friday night. I know it can be effective there. So if you can just mentally prepare yourself and know you can be at that spot, you won't let yourself drop too far. And you'll actually catapult yourself past it. You know, one thing is working out. People want to, like, you know, bench press more and more weight. Well, that's going to go up, up, up. But you're going to drop down. But I know I did 150 last week, so I can get back there and then get to 160. And so I'm always thinking about anchors. What's the best I've ever done? And know that I can catapult past that with just some more training and some more effort. I think it's important for us to pat ourselves on the back sometime and know, like, you know what? Yeah, I had a rough night tonight, but I know I'm capable of a good night. I've done it over and over. So that self-love and that self-fulfilling speak, I think, is really, really important to be successful, especially over a long basketball season.
I love that. I love that. Talk more about this anchoring concept. Is this just something that you're doing through self-evaluation and kind of marking your high points in each thing that you do as a way to build more confidence?
So I am a very list-oriented guy. So in the book, I talk about personal finance because I really believe in setting people up young to save and invest their money properly. And that's done through tracking. And it's done through, you know, smart spending and smart investing. You got to be really, really peculiar and particular, right? Like almost geeky about it. And I've been that way since I was 22 years old. So I have a path I talk about in the book on how to do that. But that anchors is super important because as your net worth gains, right, you're going to have downs in the market. That's okay. I know if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to catapult past that because I already have a marker in the round. I know I've already been at that point in terms of my valuation. Same in a career. If I stumble a little bit in my career, I know I've already been a general manager. I know if I work hard, I can exceed that again. So in basketball, what I've done, I learned it from a couple of mentors, is to journal. So I when I have a good game, I write in my book about what went well about the game. I felt good. My body felt good. I had a good meal beforehand. I had some really good conversations with the coaches. And so when I look at those things that went well, it gives me pointers to go back and do. Those are my pointers for the next game. Just go do A, B, and C, and you're likely to have a good game again. So I really believe the power of journaling in terms of good, not just the bad things that you want to improve on.
Silly question, but for someone who admires journaling, and I don't do much of it at all, does it matter if you type, or is it writing in a book is the real way to journal?
I write in a book.
You get more benefits from that?
I mean, people are using those fancy apps now with, like, you know, like it looks like a book, but it's not really a book. I still write notebooks. That's what I do. So I have a book on my bedstand, and usually in those few minutes before I go to bed, I'll sit down and just write about what went well or not so well in that game that night.
Do you think it's the act of it taking longer to actually write a word that you're more kind of entrenched in the process?
That's interesting. I mean, to me, it's sort of therapeutic. I mean, I just enjoy it. And we don't write that much anymore, right? We're in front of our computers all day long. So I think it's just a different wiring in your head and puts your mind in a different space.
Do you keep a gratitude journal too?
Sorry, go ahead.
Like a gratitude journal as well?
So I do have one, actually. My wife and I do it together. I haven't done it a lot lately because during basketball season, I'm generally doing that journal. And I'm grateful, to start off with. That's one thing, Paul. The basketball gives me great joy. If you think about, like, if I could say 5 years ago where I'd want to be in my career, I'm there. And adding basketball officiating as an avocation has just been amazing. I'm really happy today.
How did you stumble upon officiating? Who gave you the idea or what sparked that?
Yeah, Randy Jensen, I mentioned him earlier. We were having a lunch. It was a business sort of networking thing. And we just said, what do you do? I'm a basketball official. Well, that's great. How long have you been doing that? Well, my whole life. He said, you should give it a try. You know, probably love it. And literally like 2 days later, I was at a clinic. That was the summer of 2022. And went to all the fall camps. And next thing I knew, I was doing a sophomore game in December. Just kind of all last year, did under varsity. This year, I was got my first varsity games and felt really good about that. And had some high leverage games. And I think I made a lot of progress in my second year. Looking forward to year three.
The fact that I asked you a question that you already answered, my wife is not surprised at that.
It's okay.
She's not shocked at that. Make that error.
Speaking of wives, the other thing too, I would say, and we talk about this a lot in officials. And in fact, they even say it when you're at the Minneapolis Official Association annual meeting. Priorities for the year. Number one is, take care of your family. A lot of officials, I think, get themselves overbooked and focus on that. And you got to take care of your family. And, my wife is super supportive. Love her to death, and she knows that I love this. So during the season, she's very forgiving, but we got to make sure we take care of them and make sure we put our family number one.
Hmm. What's your basketball schedule looking like now that the season's over? Are you staying as active, or are you taking a break?
So the Minnesota State Championships just ended last weekend, the boys' final, and it's a little bit of a dull season here. So I've got a couple weeks off, right, and then spring ball will start. During the summer, I'll have a lot of AAU basketball to do. But the other thing I'm doing, Paul, is this year, for the first year, I'll be on a high school football crew, which is a new thing for me. So first varsity game is August 29th. I'm going to be going to some football clinics this summer, and I'm literally reading every night to try to get caught up and be ready for varsity contest in August. So I'll be doing a little basketball, a little football during the summer.
Very nice. Just to stay on your season, any plays from this season stand out? Any hard challenges you faced, and how did you respond to that?
The thing that was our first year with our shot clock. So adapting to that was a big adjustment, not just at the end of the shot clock, right? But you have to think every single possession to look up and make sure the clock starts or stops, make sure that it goes to 20 or 35, depending on where you are on the court. So just having that discipline. And one thing, Paul, that it really did, and I had a fellow official kind of gave me this process. Every trip, have a process, right? Where are my partners? Where's the clock? Did it start? And it just kind of gets you in a routine. And so the shot clock actually gave me additional discipline, which I really, really like. And the shot clock operators did a great job, so we didn't have too many problems there. But being able to call that shot good or not good, those were the hairiest moments of the year, because we did have some violations and shots that were close. I had a few games this year that were literally, I was the center official, and I was the one calling whether the shot was good or not. I think I had three of them, which is kind of insane in one season. But it's no good and the crowd's mad at you, or it's good and the crowd's happy with you, right? But it's just what actually happens. So I found those to be the most fun. I think the thing that's interesting, especially in girls basketball, Paul, I don't know why it's girls more than boys, but the hop step travel, right? They catch the ball, they do the hop and they shoot. I mean, those are walks, right? And I when it's a travel, I call it. Those are tough judgment calls, and those are probably I found the most challenging this year, was those perimeter travels, whether they were walks or not.
Yeah, I would just say about travels, it's the most the most frequent call, because every time A1 catches the ball, every time A2 catches the ball, anytime a player catches the ball, travel is in play. Yep. Right. So think about how many times someone catches a pass throughout a basketball game. So we make so many rulings on travels, and a lot of them are borderline, you know. So I would just say for everyone listening, best advice on travels is just to make sure they're obvious.
Yeah, make it there, right? I mean, so if it's close, we don't call it. But there's some of them are, I mean, they're, and you watch the girls during pregame, and they're practicing it. I said, that's a travel, right? And it just seems to be part of the game right now. And I, maybe it's particularly worse now than it's been, but it's something that I struggled with. So I watched a lot of tape and try to get really good at it.
And plus, newer officials, year one, two, three, four, I mean, it depends. Everybody's journey is different, depends on how many games you do. But we're very travel sensitive early on. Like, our radar is huge for travels. We're always thinking about it, and we're always trying to nab them and get them. Yeah. And I think, as you start, Dave, what do you think as far as travels? You've been reffing 40 years. What advice do you have for calling travels correctly?
I think you're right. I think it's great to make sure that you're getting the obvious ones right. But one of the things that we've done in our board is just, you know, as they catch the ball, identify the pivot foot. And a lot of times it looks like a travel, but it's not. You know, and just if you don't know it's a travel, don't blow it. You know, and the fans will scream and holler, oh, it looked like a travel. Well, it's not. You know, and just get to the point where you understand and you have identified the pivot foot. And a lot of times with the coaches, it's helped out with the coaches. They're hollering for a travel. So no, his left foot was down. Well, I ask him, which one was his pivot foot? And they don't know.
Yeah.
But they know that you've seen it. And, you know, and I've done some things recently where I'll point at the foot. They're screaming for travel, and I'll point at the left foot. And man, I know that foot was down. You know, so I think it's just, like you say, make sure you get the obvious and make sure you know it's a travel before you blow it.
You know, and every time you blow the whistle, be 100%. And one thing I think about, and, you know, if you're 98%, you're closer to zero in officiating, which is crazy to think about. It's like 98%. You're almost perfect. But that 2%, there's a lot within that. So you got to be 100. If you're 97, leave it alone. If you're 99, leave it alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a couple times this year, Paul, where I confirmed it on video, you know, there's a play, the coach, you know, wants to have a conversation with you. And literally, you can see why none of the three officials would have seen it. It was just in a perfectly bad spot. And we didn't have it. We didn't see it. We're not going to make something up. And I think that's okay. You know, as long as you're clear with the coach. And I like that 98 is closer to zero. I had not heard that one, Paul. It's a good one.
Yeah. And if you're reviewing film, what was I going to say about film? When you're reviewing, I totally lost my train of thought about film. So many thoughts, so much content being dissected.
It's easy. Let me go down a different path, Paul. That's the concept of investing. In the book, I talk about investing in the stock market and investing your money. But it's the same in your job, or it's the same in officiating. We have to find ways to invest in ourselves. It's the only way we're going to get better. That's reading. That's things like this podcast. It's clinics. It's asking questions. I try to get a little bit better every day. And I think that constant investing is the same as investing in the stock market. You know, you put $1 a day in the stock market, you'll be a happy guy, you know, later in life. So take time to invest in yourself. I think is a big thing we can do as young officials, because the resources today are endless.
I remember what I wanted to say. On film, when you're watching, if you're watching a travel play, if you have to rewind it 10 times, if you have to slow it down in super slow motion, chances are in real time, you should leave it alone.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true.
Well, this is great. Ben, what else do we want to hit on? You've taken us through your career, through the book, through officiating. What else do you want the listeners to know about from the book, or tell us where we can find it and all that good stuff?
One more comment I wanted to make about the book, and an important thing to me, at least it helps me in my life. To me, I have a three-legged stool of happiness. And it could be different for everybody else, but for me, it's my family, it's my fitness, and it's my faith. So to me, I know if I'm not feeling right, or if I had a bad game, or if I'm down in the dumps, it's probably one of those three things isn't right. Right. So either I'm not taking care of my family, I haven't worked out in a while, I'm not taking care of my body, am I eating the right things, or I'm not connected in my faith journey the way I should be. And I think having whatever your three legs of your stool are, because it could be three different things, understanding who you are really helps you in your officiating journey. because nothing on that court is going to bug me, right? The coach, the players, like, I'm there to do a job. I'm trying to help. I love it. I love everybody happy and have a great game. But if I'm centered in that on that stool, I'm going to be a much better official that night. So I think it's important for everybody to find that center and to be really connected to it. Think about it logically. And in the book, when I wrote the book, I wasn't even an official yet. So I didn't connect it to officiating. I connected it to your career and your family and your personality and who you are as a person. But it certainly matters in officiating. And I leverage that when I'm having a rough night.
You think about those three legs a lot in the micro when maybe you're frustrated or struggling with something?
Sometimes, let's say I have a really bad game and I can't go to sleep. Like I'm thinking about a player, I'm thinking about a coach. Those things aren't as important as the three I said, right? So if I go back to my family, my fitness, my faith, if I'm happy there, I can sleep easy, right? Go back to your core. And maybe for some people, one of the legs of the stool is officiating. Maybe it is. But for me, it isn't. So I can really go back to those core things of who I am. And it helps me get through the rough nights. And it helps me focus on officiating and not worry about the little stuff.
I love that. That's some great self-talk. You know, we say positive self-talk only. You know, when you're critiquing yourself, evaluating yourself, to be nasty in evaluation of yourself, it's just not productive. It's just not productive. Go ahead.
What we're doing is fun. I mean, I see a lot of officials get upset. I mean, this is awesome. Like when I'm running up and down the court, Paul, like maybe it's because I'm just young in my career, but I did this one huge varsity game, which is two neighboring schools. The place is packed. The TV stations are there. This is unbelievable. Like, I can't believe I'm doing this, that we get to do this. So like to me, every game is like that. And if you're not having fun, you probably should do something different because it's amazing what we get to do. Mm.
Yeah, it's a blessing. You know, it's extra. It's something we get to do on top of, you know, our live. Most of us is not our main gig. So to be able to do this in addition to what we're doing is definitely a blessing. Anybody on the call want to unmute and ask Ben any questions or give him any feedback from tonight's session?
Hey, Ben. It's Ben.
Hey, Ben.
Hey. I guess one of the questions I would ask is, if you could, I guess, you've been officiating, you said 3 years now or 2 years now?
This is my second year.
Okay. What advice would you, I assume, give yourself, I guess, year one, that you would do maybe differently or things you probably wouldn't do differently that you probably were doing back then?
Yeah, a couple of things. One, I at least for the first half of my first season, if not the whole first season, I was too worried about like where I was going to be in 5 years. Mm-hmm. Like I really thought, because I know the sport, I know the schools, I know the community, I know the players. Like, when am I going to do my first varsity game? And I just finally realized that it's just not the way it goes, right? And as soon as I figured that out, I could slow down and really enjoy the game I'm doing and be the best I could be at that level. Mm-hmm. I think I got better like that day, right? So just be patient. The assigners are their job is to bring you up through the ranks when you're ready. And I think that my association has done a really good job of that. So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. The second thing, and I don't even know if this is possible, but I was really, really scared in terms of communicating to coaches. Mm-hmm. I remember there was one time where I'll just say what happened. It was a rough game and it was a quiet crowd. It was a JV game. Gym was pretty empty. And the coach literally screams, "Do you even have a whistle?" Mm-hmm. Like a yell bat, right? I mean, that's not acceptable.
Yeah.
But I turtled and I didn't say anything.
You didn't show him you had a whistle?
No. Yeah. It was a perfect opportunity to go, yeah, I got one, right? It would have been a perfect comeback. But, you know, I think maybe all officials go through that. Uh-huh. My second season was remarkably better. I really got used to talking to coaches and handling situations. But, man, I was scared. And I don't know how you fix that, except just going through some of those games and getting reps and getting more comfortable.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. I think especially with officiating, I think there's no like guide. Well, there's guides on, you know, obviously like the mechanics of it and obviously the rules, but some of the things you just kind of have to go through as far as dealing with head coaches, the crowds, there's no really guide on that. So yeah, you have to go through stuff like that.
You gotta go through it. And then, you know, the other thing too is, and this was taught to me, and we talked about right off the top of the call here, is to be patient. I mean, when you're a new official, you want to blow the whistle. I mean, you're almost blowing the whistle before the contact happens. Year two, I was much, much more patient and many more no calls, right? Mm-hmm. The defender straight up and down, watch the play. Was there impact? No, we're moving on. And so that, I think that's a big maturity thing that happened to me and probably happens to a lot of officials in, you know, year two or three. But like I said, some of it you just got to go through, mm-hmm. right? And practice and do a lot of games, which I try to do.
You were mentioning one way to improve your communication skills with coaches. I recommend tapping into the Crown Refs Rapid Responses podcast series. We have 15 episodes and a full collection of content on Patreon. And last night, I just published something brand new from our creator shop, which is on Patreon. It's a rapid response scenario pack. So it includes 45 slides that document 10 different scenarios that happen in a real game. We document the dialogue between the official and the ref, and then some educational takeaways. So if you're interested, the link is in the bio of this podcast. You like that little plug, Ben, right?
I mean, that's a great series, and I've listened to all of them, and I've used the tools, Paul. Coach, we're very approachable. Mm-hmm. I've used the lingo. Okay. You put your own spin on it, and I've really enjoyed it.
That's awesome. Well, I've enjoyed our time tonight. Anybody have any questions or anything officiating wise you guys want to discuss before we go? Anything fresh in your mind? See a play recently or maybe a situation from your recent game you want to chop about?
I got a question for Ben. If you rewrote your book.
Which one? Okay, now.
What would you add, change, or take out?
Good one.
At least two. In fact, I've actually thought about like writing a version two. I thought of it because my whole entire basketball journey is not in there, right? And one thing. So I'm 51 years old, and I've been just on the fast track of my career, just working hard. And I wish I had found something like this earlier, something that makes you just blow, right? And that's the younger you are when you find that. I think the better off. Now I had kids and I was coaching and other things, but I mean, reffing really, really makes me happy. And I would talk about that in the book, about finding that you know, happiness. The second thing I would talk about is treasury bills. That sounds like a pretty boring thing, but I have an investment strategy in my book, and I didn't talk about T-bills, but with interest rates now in the fives and the sixes, investing in U.S. treasury bills is actually a good thing. I would have talked more about that as a finance geek, but.
Appreciate the insight. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah.
And Ben, before we go, just tell us where we can find the book and any of your contact info that you want to leave.
I'm on Facebook and Twitter. Ben Lamprime is my handle there. LinkedIn as well. My professional career is there on LinkedIn. Jumpstart Your Future is the name of the book. It's on Amazon. I really, really am passionate about mentoring. That's where the book came from. So in terms of, you know, young officials, young people, if any of you want to reach out to me, email's ben@benlampron.com. You can send me an email and ask me a question. I'm happy to answer them. And it gives me a lot of joy to share what I've learned in my career and the mentors who have helped me. I love passing that on to other young folks.
Wonderful. Thank you for your time. Appreciate everybody coming tonight on this call. It was great seeing, especially some of our new members. Very strong showing for you guys in week one. So can't thank you enough. Very grateful for the community, and I will see you guys next week. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Paul.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you, Paul. Outstanding.
Thank you for listening to the Crown Refs Podcast. Serve the game.
All right, Johnny Gleese reaching out. Regarding knee tucks. Comfortable feel, you know, easy to put on in the locker room before a game. I'll hang my shirt up, put them on the shirt. Once you pop your shirt on, after you're done with stretching and warming up, you know, they clip real quick. You can have a little slide band to tighten them up and down. I like to go tight, just like a sneaker. When you lace your shoes up, you like it tight. It's going to loosen up after the game goes, as you run, as your muscles flex. And they never ride up. Some, you know, I've had good success with these, keeping my shirt in. When you're at the free throw line, watching the game, you don't want to be messing with your shirt, messing with your pants. knee tucks are, you know, the way that helps us to not do that.
My name is Grant Vermeer, a member of the Crown Refs community. My first year as a high school official, that's when I found out about the Crown Refs community. Having my military background, I love being a part of teams. I want to be a part of a group that has high standards, that holds each other accountable, but also supports and loves each other, and has a desire for everyone in the group to grow. If you're a young referee or someone who loves refereeing and wants to be a part of a group, this is an amazing community for you. I feel like I've gotten better as an official. I've had a community and friends and support through this process, which can otherwise be a little bit lonely as you're on the road a lot. The culture is amazing in here. Make sure to come check it out.
Serve the game.
This episode of the Crown Refs podcast is brought to you by RefereeStore.com. To save 15% on all United Attire products, enter Crown15 at checkout. We hope you enjoy this episode, and do us one last favor before you listen. Have a great rest of your day.